The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning. We're going to be reading from Ruth chapter 4 this morning. Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Then he said to the Redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me, that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz said, "The day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance." Then the Redeemer said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it." Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself," he drew off his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon. Also Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day." Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be renowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than 7 sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. This is the word of the Lord.
Amen. Praise be to Christ. Well, good morning. Let's try it one more time. Good morning. Good morning. Last Sunday at 9 a.m. Next Sunday, Lord willing, we're going to be outdoors celebrating Easter Sunday. As of right now, the weather looks beautiful. That'll be at 10 a.m., and then the Sunday after that'll be at 10 a.m. So there's no reason why you guys should be late next Sunday. Zero. Thank you, Ashley, for reading. Thank you, Jim, for sharing that. Thank you, Circle Team. Thank you to our healthcare frontline workers. Thank you to Summit for your generosity. Just really, really encouraging to be a part of this and encouraging to be able to close out our study through the book of Ruth. I hope you've been encouraged by it, challenged by it. And chapter 4 is a pretty powerful ending to a very unique story. How many of you, raise a hand, how many of you have ever been to the Grand Canyon? Okay, quite a bit of us, quite a few. 2017 was my first experience to the Grand Canyon, and it did not disappoint. By far one of the coolest experiences of my life. And I did not get to experience it with my wife. I experienced it with my son, which was a cool moment. Love it. Was there with him. It's my first encounter. And if you have never been, which is about half of us in the room, I cannot even begin to describe the experience. The views, the humbling reality of how small you feel in that moment, standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon. And we were not there long, and we decided to go to four different viewpoints. And at each outlook, here's what I said to myself: this cannot get any better. This is out of this world. And then we would drive several miles and approach a different vantage point. And here's what I would say to myself: this is out of this world. This is even better than before. It was almost as if the further we went, the greater the perspective became. And if you've been, man, it's just breathtaking. It is impeccable. And if you have been, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, by a show of hands, how many of you have ever been to Whiteside Mountain in Cashiers, North Carolina? Raise your hand. Just a few, like three or four of us. All right. Tristan and I love that area, and we're recently up there, and we decided to hike Whiteside. It's a great spot. It's a pretty simple hike. It's a 1.9 mile loop along the Eastern Continental Divide with an elevation of about 511 feet. And so a few months ago, we were up there. It's the first time we've ever been to this particular mountain. And at the very top of the mountain, here's what I said to myself: this is pretty cool. Super quiet, beautiful day. But the further you walked the loop, if you've been there, you know this, the further you walk, the greater the perspective became. As you walk the journey following this loop of a mountain, there's more that comes into view. The perspective at the final pass is much different than what you see at the first pass. And that is what Ruth 4 is like. There are these crescendo moments, if you will, throughout the story of Ruth that become clearer, fuller, and better as it unfolds. And it's almost as if you read this story, even as we got to the end of chapter 3 last week, you begin to anticipate how it's going to end. It's easy to read Ruth 4 and to assume that it's just going to have this perfect ending. So where have we been? There's this husband that takes his wife and children to a foreign country because there's a famine back at home. There's a famine in Bethlehem. We don't know why or how, but over the course of 10 years, husband and children die, leaving a widow and two daughters-in-law. This is a crisis moment for the widow, whose name is Naomi. Naomi decides to head back home once she learns that there is no longer a famine. And this is what she pleads with her two daughters-in-law: hey, you should not join me. You should go home. And then Orpah, we know, takes her up on that advice. Ruth does not. The text tells us that she clings tightly to her. She commits her undying loyalty to her. So they return to Bethlehem. They return at a season of harvest, a season of reaping. And Ruth catches the eye of a man by the name of Boaz, who is known as a kinsman redeemer. And you begin to piece together the potential outcome of this story. Will Ruth and Boaz get married? Is that what you're thinking? I know we read the story this morning, but that's how the story projects. Will they have a child? Will Naomi heal? Like, will her bitterness subside and turn to peace and humility and joy again? Will God reveal his sovereign plan over this story and over their lives? Will he prove his faithful love to them, especially to the ones who have struggled to believe that he actually loves them? And if he does prove his faithful love to them, what will that love look like? You see, based off of what Ashley just read to us this morning, we can piece together most of the answers to these questions. Like, we can wrap a bow around the story of Ruth and go, it has the happy ending, let's just move on to the next part of the story. But there's two problems with that. Here's the first. If we read Ruth like that, then it turns this narrative into a fairy tale, and the Bible isn't written to trivialize dark and difficult moments of life. The story of Ruth is difficult and devastating, while showing us that God is not absent in the midst of the difficult and the devastating. Here's the second reason we cannot read Ruth that way. If we think that chapter 4 ends with this huge celebration and every sad and painful emotion now has turned into delight and inexplicable joy, we are going to miss the redemptive work of God in the ordinary, mundane moments of life. The days where we're trying to figure it all out, the days where we're trying to make sense of it all, the days that, quite honestly, God doesn't feel near or he doesn't feel that good. Chapter 4, for sure, is leading us to some place beautiful. The ending of chapter 4, if we have eyes to see it, is impeccable. But you have to look for it. And you have to walk the journey. You have to pay attention to the redemptive hand of God that is leading us somewhere. It's leading us somewhere that will stun us, but it's going to stun us in ways that we are not naturally expecting. And so I want to try to sum up where we're going in chapter 4 in this way. Let me read it to you. God's redemption in our life is often unexpected. Now hang on to me, okay? It's often unexpected. It comes in a variety of ways if we will look closely and pay attention. There are many moments where God's redemptive hand is at work in our lives, and if we are unaware, if we are not paying attention, we will simply shrug our shoulders at what God is doing. At other times, his redemptive hand, it will surprise us, stretch us, and even overwhelms us. But here's what it never does. The redemptive work of God never leaves us alone. It doesn't mean we will never feel alone, but it does mean we are never actually alone. The redemptive work of God is always full and complete, and even though we await the full and final and complete redemption, one of our bodies, two of every sad and devastating reality we have endured in this life to be restored and made whole again, his redemptive work empowers us to believe, even in the midst of our bitterness. Even in our doubt, even in our apathy, even in our fear, even in our failed expectations, his redemptive work empowers us to hope, even in the midst of our grief. This is the story of Ruth. That God is working in 1,001 ways in the background of a normal family living in Bethlehem in dark and devastating days. And you can see it, right? You can see it in what we just read. God is at work. He's redeeming what is broken. Now, does Ruth see it? Probably not. Does Naomi see it? I don't know. Probably not. Likely not. And that's often the way it is in our story. Unclear, messy, feel all alone. God, what are you doing? But there he is, present, faithful, in control, showing steadfast love, redeeming broken things. And if we don't pay attention, we're going to miss it. Chapter 4, verse 1 says, "Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, 'Turn aside, friend, sit down here.' And he turned aside and sat down." Verse 3, "Then he said to the Redeemer, 'Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one beside you to redeem it, and I come after you.' And he said, 'I will redeem it.' Then Boaz says, 'Well, the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance.' Then the Redeemer said, 'I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it.'" So chapter 4 begins with Boaz going to the town gate. And this is incredibly significant in this cultural moment. The town gate was the center of where complaints and disputes, broken laws were settled, but it was also the center of commerce. It was the center of where business took place. And so Boaz gets there early at the center of the town gate, and there's something that he's expecting. There's a dispute that he is expecting to be settled. And then we're introduced here to this Redeemer with no name. No name Redeemer. We don't know anything about him other than what we learn of him in chapter 3, verse 12, which is that he is more closely related to Ruth and Naomi than Boaz himself. So we know there's tension here, right? Boaz is going there. We know his intent already from chapter 3. And the question that now lingers at the town gate between the interaction of the no-name Redeemer and Boaz the Redeemer is, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? Because Ruth and Naomi's future is on the line. And I know on the surface it doesn't appear that way. It appears that all we're talking about is buying some land. But in this cultural moment, to take the land is also to take responsibility for Ruth. And to take responsibility for Ruth is to take responsibility for Naomi. And that is a steep price to pay. So he backs out. Do you see what he says in the text? "I cannot, for it will impair my own inheritance." Boaz, if you want to redeem it if you wish. Now it's subtle right here, but I want you to see it. Right here is a powerful demonstration of God's redemptive work unfolding. Boaz is a complete contrast to this no-name Redeemer. The one whom we do not know is not willing to pay the price to redeem Ruth, but Boaz is, at great cost to himself. Now think about this. The risk of going to the town gate on behalf of a Moabite from a pagan country is incredibly high. Add to that the cost of taking upon his shoulders and his life the debt of what it would mean to care for and protect, to sustain Ruth and Naomi. And Boaz goes, "I will redeem her, just as I promised." Now, as we look, as we stand on the cliff, so to speak, and we look back over the life of Boaz, here's what we see. We see a man with high integrity, a man who is eager to do the right thing, The godly thing, a man who is willing at great risk, at great cost to himself, to redeem this broken family. And I want you to know that when we get to verse 13 in just a moment, and we're going to see the bringing together of this marriage, that this goes well beyond emotion for Boaz. This is way bigger than, oh, she catches my eye, or this notion of romantic love. We don't really know that. Ruth, the story of Ruth often gets portrayed as this beautiful romantic story. It's way deeper than that. It's not logical to marry her. It's not logical to redeem her. It's not a pragmatic decision. In fact, most people would follow the path of the unnamed redeemer, that when the cost is revealed, there must be another way, is the thought. Because the price is too much to bear. But here's Boaz, who does not live his life on the premise of what seems logical from a cultural standpoint. Boaz is a man of high integrity, a man who has fixed his heart on the design of God. Therefore, Boaz does what's right, even though it's hard. Now, Terry, what's the point? Here's the point. God is working through the obedience of Boaz to bring about his redemptive purposes for Ruth and Naomi. It's subtle, but it's there. It's subtle, but it's providential. Look at verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Now it's a little bit clearer, right? We stand at this point of the journey and go, how could it get any better? The Lord gave her conception. It's another point of the journey. God gives this family a child. Ruth has a baby, which means Naomi now has a grandson. And as Naomi takes this little child into her arms, this community of women around her, this circle of women who have been with her, they pronounce a blessing over her. Verse 14. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons." That's a Jewish way of saying completion. That's a Jewish way of saying that what God has given back to you is the perfect family. Has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child, laid him on her lap, and became his nurse. Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer. I want you to think about this for a moment. Ruth, who pledged her undying loyalty to Naomi, who has loved her faithfully through grief, bitterness, and loss, has given Naomi a grandson. Boaz, with his honorable integrity, his faithful obedience to do what was right, has given Naomi a grandson. It's a sign of hope for her, an opportunity to renew her spirit, to strengthen her heart. To Naomi, Ruth is what? She's a gift. Now we see that. I don't know at what degree Naomi saw that, but we know for Naomi, to Naomi, Ruth is a gift. Boaz, a gift. Community of women, gift. Grandson, gift. God at each step of the way. Now here's, let me interject some tension. Maybe it's the relief of some tension. Does the grandson replace a dead husband and two dead sons? No. The baby doesn't take away the pain. The baby doesn't diminish her pain. The loss is still real for her. Naomi will live the rest of her life with the reality of that pain. However, the baby is a sign on a very dark road that God is not absent, that He is still redeeming. The baby is not everything, but the baby is something. And the something is this: God is near, God is faithful, God is in control, God is still redeeming. Verse 17. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name. I want to point this out to you. It should not be lost on us that Naomi had women who lifted up her gaze to see that the baby was a gift from God. She needed a community of people around her to go, this is the redemptive work of God. This is God at work in the midst of your darkness. Don't miss that. What's also interesting to me, let me read it first. The women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. What's also interesting to me is that the women, the community around her, they named the child. Which is an indication that what's going on with this little child is much larger than Ruth and Boaz just having a baby. Well, in what way, you ask? Well, this baby, turns out, will be the grandfather of King David. And even that point of this monumental view or vantage point is just the beginning of something far beyond what we can imagine. And so here's what the narrator of this story does. Verse 18, you go, well, why in the world would you end a powerful story with genealogy? Now, these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. And Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. Obed wasn't the answer to the brokenness of this family. Sure, he was a form of God's redemptive plan, but he was not the fulfillment of it. So at the close of this story, the narrator is giving us a glimpse of more that is to come and the ultimate fulfillment of redemption. Brothers and sisters, the ultimate fulfillment of redemption will always lead us to a person, and that person is Jesus. He's the answer. He's the fulfillment. Every single redemptive work of God in our life is intended to point us and lead us to our great Redeemer, Jesus. He's the point. He's the answer. He's everything that we long for, even if we are not presently aware that He is what we long for. You see, it's easy to read this story and to think the worst thing that could have happened to Naomi and her family was having to endure a famine. Until the worst thing was losing her husband. Until the worst thing was losing her two sons. But it was there in that darkness, working in the fields of a foreign pagan land as a result of a famine, that a lady came into her life by the name of Ruth. And with Ruth came companionship and loyalty. And with companionship and loyalty came provision. And with provision came a man by the name of Boaz, and with Boaz came a son, and with a son came a lineage that led to David, and with David came a legacy that led to Jesus. The fulfillment of redemption always leads us to Jesus. That's the power of her story. That's the power of your story and my story. So two really quick significant reminders as we close out. Ruth, which by now, if you haven't picked up on, isn't really about Ruth. Here's the first reminder. Number one, redemption takes perspective. Redemption takes perspective. At the most fundamental level, and I know I've been talking about redemption a whole lot this morning, and I haven't defined it for you, so now I am. Redemption is someone gaining something on your behalf that you are incapable of gaining for yourself. I'll say it again. Redemption is someone gaining something on your behalf that you are incapable of gaining for yourself. That's redemption. So here's what you and I, in light of this story of God, if we're going to embrace God's story and our story in light of His story, here's what you and I have to come to grips with. There is an unbearable weight upon our shoulders that we cannot bear alone. Sin, a divided heart, unmet expectations, broken dreams, heavy burdens, difficult circumstances. We cannot bear them alone. We cannot gain wholeness and satisfaction and peace for ourselves. We need a Redeemer. And without this perspective, we will look for redemption in 101 places that has zero capacity to give us what our heart truly longs for. Zero. That's perspective number one. Here's perspective number two. The redemptive work of God in your life will show up in ways that you least expect it to. There'll be times it shocks you. Sometimes it'll overwhelm you, but please hear me. Most of the time, it will be ordinary and simple. Most of the time, it won't blow you away. And if you're not careful, you'll simply shrug your shoulders at it. Terry, why would you compare the Grand Canyon to Whiteside Mountain? I'll tell you why. Because we think beauty is only in the extravagant. We thirst for the incredible, the awe-inspiring moments. We want them, we pursue them, we exhaust our energy in hopes that they might sustain us. All the while, we miss the beauty within the mundane and the ordinary. What is true in this story is also true in our story. God is as present, powerful, and good when Ruth is carrying food back to Naomi as He is when Naomi is holding that little baby in her lap. Same God, same faithfulness, same providential care, both weaving His purpose and plan. The redemptive work of God for every one of you in this room. Even if you sit in this room this morning and you're not a genuine follower of Jesus Christ, the fact that you're here, you go, well, so-and-so invited me and I really don't want to be here. I don't really know how I ended up here, but I'm here. No. God works even through that. The redemptive work of God in this moment in your life is at work in 1,001 ways, and you may be aware of 1 to 2 or 3 of those. Redemption takes perspective. Lastly, redemption takes patience. It takes patience. Every mundane and difficult thing in your life is not there for you to simply get through it. And that's what we want, right? If it's uncomfortable, if it's painful, if it stretches us, we're like, okay, just wait for this season to be over. Just waiting for my kids to get out of this season so I can get to the next season. And I thought that for a while until I had a teenager. I love you, man. The redemption that Naomi and Ruth experienced was richer and fuller because of the path they walked. And here's what I know. They would have not chosen that path on their own. Neither would you or I. But there's something about the waiting. There's something about the patiently enduring that made their redemption sweeter. Now just imagine in that moment that as Naomi's waiting, and yes, she's still filled with grief, and yes, there's probably hints of bitterness, but that baby is a moment that she goes, God does love me. He is in control of my life. And his redemptive plan, he's weaving in and out. And I don't know what Obed's future is, but God does. And he's weaving his plan and he's weaving his purposes to bring about something far beyond what she could imagine. Do we grieve while we wait? Absolutely. But we do not grieve without hope. Do we struggle with bitterness? There's some of you in this room. You go, I don't think I love him, God. I don't think I can trust him. Yeah. Here's what I want you to know. Bitterness is not opposed to belief. We can struggle to believe that God is powerful and that he is good and still believe that he is powerful and good. Redemption takes patience. I want to end this way. Doug's going to come back out and lead us in a song of response. And I want to read something to you from Paul Tripp, and I'll let his words be our final words. He says, there would be no kingdom of God, no church of Jesus Christ, no people of God, no population in the new heavens and the new earth if it were not for the infinite patience of the Lord. God is patient in love, judgment, sovereignty, wisdom, power, and mercy. He is willing to do the same thing in us and for us again and again and again and again and again until it takes root and flourishes. He is willing to say the same thing to us over and over and over and over again until we hear it and live it. He greets our weakness with patience, not disgust. He responds to our wanderings with patience of rescuing grace, not with condemnation. He patiently picks us up when we fail. He patiently dresses our self-inflicted wounds. He patiently stands in our way when we want our own way. He never tires of us, never turns his back on us, never walks away. He patiently gives himself to the work that he has begun in us, and he will patiently continue his work until it's done. His work, which is a redemptive work, is a process, not an event. Redemption, true redemption, is longevity work. It's legacy work. It takes patience. Would you stand with me this morning? Father, I pray that your word, through such a powerful story, would speak to our hearts this morning to see the surprising, awe-inspiring, never leaving us alone, redemptive work that is always present, even in the ordinary, the mundane, and the dark and difficult days of our life. You are the ever-present, the ever-faithful, the all-wise God who is good, in control, accomplishing your purposes. I pray that this idea of perspective this morning, I pray that you, Spirit of God, would illuminate hearts and shape hearts and give us the perspective that maybe Naomi and Ruth didn't have, that in light of Jesus and the early church and your story over our life can give us, that you are working for our good and your glory. Give us patience. Give us a community of people. May we be open to that ourselves, to lean into other people, not like us. Not like us in the most common ways, but also like us because our hearts have been united together because of the blood of Jesus Christ and his redemptive plan, so that we can remind one another along the journey that you are indeed good, faithful, present, in control. You are still redeeming broken things. May it be so. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.